Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi Maseches Bavakama Daf Ayin Vav. Being that Daf Ayin Vav and Ayin Zayin are rather short Dafim, let's perhaps combine them together into one Shir, Bezus Hashem. So on the top of Daf Ayin Vav Amar Aleph, for the first line, the Mishnah says, Gona v'higdish. So the Ganav stole the animal and he followed it by a tvicha, by doing a tvicha or mechira. Typically, shechting the animal or selling it triggers dalat v'hei, but not in this case. There's no chiyuv of paying four or five times as much. And the question is why? Amri. So the Bnei Yeshiva asked the following question. V'shloima atvicha lo mechayev. I can fully understand that when the Ganav does the shechita after being magdish, he stole an animal, he would not pay dalat v'hei. Why? The chika tavach, because the tvicha that he had just performed, the hegdish katavach. Did he do it on the animal belonging to the owner or an animal belonging to hegdish? Of course it's hegdish. Why? Rashi explains. Because apparently the very fact that the ganav had the ability to turn this animal into hegdish indicates to us that the original owner had already done yush. He had already given up any hope of retrieving his lost animal. In which case, we have the yush factor combined with another factor, shinui rishus, change of ownership, because the ganav now took hold of this item. So that combination, yush and shinui rishus, allowed the ganav to make it hegdish. So now, the hegdish actually takes hold. And when the ganav does the tvicha on this animal, he is shechting an animal belonging to hegdish. And we know there's no halacha of dalat v'hei payments with respect to animals belonging to hegdish. It's not, you know, rei eyu. It's not your equal. So in any case, we understand this halacha. The hegdish katavach v'loy, and it wasn't demari katavach. It no longer belonged to the owner. Elo, but here comes an interesting question. A hegdish l'chayiv. Skip the tvicha. Okay. What did this ganav do? Stole the animal and then turned into hegdish. By the very fact that he turned it into hegdish, what did he really do? He effected a change of ownership. It now belongs to hegdish rather than to a common person. So basically, he sold it. Mali machr lehedyit, mali machr leshamayim. What difference? Whether he sold it to his next door neighbor or to the hegdish. So this ganav should have to pay dalat v'hei because he did a mechira. The actual hegdish, by its very transfer of ownership, that's called a mechira. So why isn't he chayv? The Gemara will endeavor to explain why, in some cases, according to some opinions, turning something into hegdish proper doesn't necessarily reflect a full change of ownership. How? Hamani Rab Shimoni. We're going according to Shitas Rab Shimon. The Amar who tells us in many places throughout Shas. Kachem Shachai Bachar Yusum. Suppose a person commits himself to bringing a carbon, rather than pointing to the animal and turning it into a carbon. He says, "I am going to bring a carbon." Then he designates, you know, this animal for the fulfillment of his commitment. That's called Kachem Shachai Bachar Yusum. He's fully responsible. What does that mean? Why? Because it was a personal commitment. I am responsible. So if something goes wrong with this animal, gets lost or stolen, he has to replace it. Bottom line, he has a vested interest. He has a financial stake in this animal. That is considered like partial ownership. It's considered in my possession. Meaning I'm partial owner. Even though it's hegdish, but I have a vested interest. I have a financial stake in this animal. I'm a partial owner. That explains the halacha, where the ganav stole the animal, turned it into a hegdish, but since he's responsible for it, the process of turning it into hegdish was not considered a full transfer of ownership, a full change of hands, because the ganav is still sort of holding on to it, and therefore it's not called a mechira. He doesn't pay dalat v'hei. Beautiful. asks the Gemara, what do you mean? How mid the sefer Rav Shimon he? But since the next part of our Mishnah quotes Rav Shimon, Havi, Reisha lav Rav Shimon. Apparently the first part is not Rav Shimon. So you can't present this explanation, which is based on Rav Shimon. Eloch of Ma'eskinon, says the Gemara, another possible explanation to the Mishnah could be like this. Bekotchim Kalim, Leganov stole the animal and turned it into a lower form of carbon, kachem ka, a lighter hegdish. What's the difference? Because, once again, if it's just kachem kalim, like Rashi says, like a shlamim, he's still part owner. And therefore, there was no full transfer of possession. In which case, it doesn't equate mechira. Going to the shita, the Amar tells us, kachem kalim mamen bailamu. Kachem balim is still somewhat belonging to its owner, to its magdish. So that explains why when it doesn't, this type of hegdish, we don't treat it like a mechira. Uber shusei kaim, it's still his. But, says the Gemara, according to this way of thinking, that's only because it's kachem kalam. But if he would have made it kache kadash, like an asham or a chatas, then a full detachment takes place. It's a full giveaway to hegdish. In which case, we would consider it like a mechira, and he would have to pay dal v'hei, right? Aval kachi kachi maiva would be mishalim. He would have to pay tashlumi dal v'chamisha. If that's true, why, you know, when the Mishnah looks for a case where he has to pay, we sort of shy away from, you know, a hegdish scenario. Stick to hegdish, even with the hegdish context. In some cases you pay, like this case we just explained. Adatani Resha. So let's go back to the first part of the Mishnah, where it says, Ganav v'tavach. He stole the animal, did tvicha, v'achak achigdish. Then the Ganav was magdish. In this case, since the Shechita preceded the Hegdish, he pays, Mishalim tashlim v'rav chamisha. That seems to be the only case where it works. Why do you have to come on? Why resort to a Shechita before it was magdish? Even if the incident took place after it was Hegdish, we can still find Dal Vehei, as we just explained, if he turned it into Kachi Kachim, which is tantamount to Mechira. Let's find a distinction within this case, within, you know, post-Hegdish situations, and we'll say like this. When is there no Dal Vehei? Bekachim Kalim. When it was just a lighter form of Hegdish, as we explained. That's not a full giveaway. But if he turned it into a higher form of Hegdish, which is a full giveaway, he would have to pay as though he sold it. So if it's true, why doesn't the Mishnah mention this? Ella, you're right. It doesn't matter. Whether the Ganav chose to make it a Shlomim, which is Kachim Kalim, or a Chatas, Kachim Kachim, either way, he's putter from Dal Dvehe, and the question is why, right? Uda Kakashi Loch, regarding your question, let's go back to your question. Let him at least pay as though he sold it, because he fully gave it away to Shemayim. Mali Machrila Hedit. Mali Machrila Shemayim. What difference is there whether he sold it to his friend or to Hashem? Very simple difference. Very pashut. Machrila Hedit. When the Ganav sold the animal to his next door neighbor, that's truly a change of hands. Meikara Tura du Ruvin, Vashta Tura de Shimon. Before sale, before the Mechira, it was called Ruvin's animal, you know, the Ganav's animal. Now, post sale, it's called Shimon's. A total and complete change of ownership, change of identity. But when he's Magdish a carbon, you know, you still are connected to that carbon. It's going to be credited to your account. It still relates to you. It identifies with its owner. That cannot be considered a mechira. Machar l'shamayim. If he gives it to Hashem as a carbon, whether this type of carbon or that type of carbon, it doesn't matter. It still identifies with its owner, who's bringing the carbon. He's still connected to it. Meikara turu d'ruvein. Initially, it was Ruvein's animal. V'hashta turu d'ruvein. Now it's also Shimon's ox. Right? So there's no real change taking place, and therefore you cannot compare it to Mechira. That's the answer to the question. Oganov steals, makes it Hegdish, does Tavicha his potter. Why isn't the Hegdash itself called a Mechira? Because it isn't. Now Rav Shimon adds, Rav Shimon Eimer, you know, it depends. If we're speaking about Kachim, for what you're responsible for, then you pay Dalat Mehe. Otherwise, you're not. The Gemara figures at this point that Rav Shimon is not speaking where the Ganav stole the animal and did Tevicha. He stole the animal, he was Maglish, and did Tevicha because ultimately the animal certainly doesn't belong to the victim, to the original owner anymore. And there's no room to be triggering Dalat Vehe because of the Tevicha on a Sharef Hegdish. Rather, apparently, Rav Shimon is disagreeing with this aforementioned principle, this concept that we just came up with, that the act of making something Hegdish is not tantamount to Mechira. On that, Rav Shimon disagrees. He says, no, the actual Maaseh of Hegdish, that triggers Dalat Vehe because it's considered like a sale. And Rav Shimon says, well, if it's kachin that you're still responsible for, then it would trigger Dalat Vehe. And the question is, what do you mean? If the Ganav is still responsible for the Hegdish that he made, that means, if anything, he has more vested interest. He has more, a bigger stake, a financial stake in the animal. So if anything, the fact that he's still responsible should give us reason to exempt him, to not consider the Hegdish as Mechir. It's not a full giveaway. He's still tied to it. Amri said, Bnei Yeshiva wanted to understand. He the son of Rav Shimon. True, let's say Rav Shimon holds, different than we just learned, but he holds that, yeah, Hegdash is like a Mechir. Okay? Mali Mechir Lehedit. Mali Mechir Leshamayim. Makes no difference whether he sold it to his friend or to the Shamayim. Assuming we're working with that principle. But it should go the other way around. Hifcha Meboyle should be saying the other way. Kachem Shechai Vachar Yusin Potter. If the Ganav who made this Hegdash is still responsible, so still connected to him, Potter, it's not called a Mechir. Because it hadn't yet left his domain completely, he's still attached, he's still responsible for it. Whereas Kachem She'ena Chai Bechir Yusan, Chai. But if he's absolved from Achrayus, right? If it's a type of carbon that he's not responsible for, how's that? Let's say he said, this is the carbon, that's it, I'm not responsible, whatever happened. So in that case, it's a full giveaway. It's a full detachment. Chayev. In this case, he should be chayev dal vehe, as though he sold it, as though he gave it away. The mapkele mershuse, because totally leaving his domain. So what does Rav Shimon mean? You're right, says the Gemara. He's not going on the halacha that you thought he's going on. He's going on a totally different halacha. Amri Yisrael Bnei Yeshiva responded. You're right. Rav Shimon amil sachriti koi. Rav Shimon is referring to a different halacha in the Mishnah. And this is the way we explain Rav Shimon. The Mishnah there says, "Ein ha-goynev." This is back on Daf Samach Beis. "Ein ha-goynev achar ha-ganav mishalem tashlum medal vehe." So, if a person robs an animal from a robber's home, there's no dal vehe. And likewise, "V'chein ha-goynev hegdish mibeis balim potter." Let's say a person had an animal which he made into a carbon. An owner made his animal into a carbon. A person comes and steals it. There's no halacha of dalat vehe. Why? My time. Because the pasuk in describing the halachas of dalat vehe says, v'gunav b'seish. Only if it was stolen from the actual owner's home. V'lim b'seh hegdish, as opposed to the animal stolen from hegdish. So bottom line is, there's no halacha of, this is the pasuk, by the way, of kefil. So there's no halacha of kefil when you steal from the hegdish. As there's no kefil, there's no possibility of dal vehe either, as we explained the other day, because there's no such thing as paying, you know, two or three. So, bottom line is, there's no halacha of kefil or dal vehe if you steal from hegdish. On that comes Reb Shimon and says like this. Reb Shimon Omer, it depends. Depends how connected the owner was to whose carbon. Depends if he still had a sort of a financial stake in the carbon, in which case it still relates to him. And when one steals it, it is considered having stolen from the owner's possession. Rav Shimon Omer Kachim Shechai Bachar Yusin Chayev. If it's a type of carbon for which the owner is still responsible for, then if a person goes ahead and steals that, he's Chayev. my time away, Karina Bay Beguna Besa Ish, because it is considered having stolen from the owner's, you know, possession. The question is why? But it's still Hegdish, it's not really his. So this we explained the other day. It's called Dover Hagoyrim Lamomin. Although the owner doesn't really own it anymore, it's Hegdish, but he has vested interest, he has financial stake in this. It can bring about loss. It can bring about gain, meaning if he loses, he has to pay for the animal. If he holds on to it, he gains, he benefits. So, although it doesn't really have inherent value to the owner, it belongs to Hegdish, but it can cause, it can bring, it has financial effect on the owner. That's called partial ownership. And that's called Vigunav Besish. However, if he has no achrayus, v'she'ena chay b'achrayuson, then he's potter. Why? Deloy karinan bei v'gunav b'seish. But if the owner is no longer responsible for the whereabouts of this carbon, he didn't take upon himself any achrayus, so it's not his mamon, it's not garev l'mamon, and when a ganav steals it at this point, he hasn't really stolen anything from the owner, he stole it from the hegdish, there's no halachas of kefil, etc. Okay, so that's the Pshan Rav Shem. Now we fully understand what he meant to say. Here comes a new kasha. So we're saying that according to Rav Shimon, in some cases, by stealing an animal which is already hegdish and proceeding with tvicha, you pay dalat v'hei. But the question is like this: michti. Let's think about it again. Shamini le Rav Shimon. We happen to know that according to Rav Shimon, in order for the tvicha to trigger dalat v'hei, he tells us like this, Da'amar, shchita, she'ena ru'ya, lo yishma shchita. What's the purpose of shchita? It's to accomplish heter, to permit the basar la'achila, right? So you can eat the flesh. A shchita which does not bring about that result is not considered a shchita. So with respect to dalat v'hei, he shouldn't be paying dalat v'hei. Why? Kachim nami, when you do shchita on a carbon in your backyard, it's worthless. You're making it asr. Shchita sheinu ru'ya. It's not a shchita which makes it mutter. So there should be no dalat v'hei. The Gemara will present two terutzim to this question. Firstly, ki asr Rav Dimi. Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. He quoted a terutz from Rabbi Yochanan. B'sheichet mimim b'fnim l'shem balam. You're right. This was a full carbon. The Ganav took it and brought it into the Beis Hamikdash, into the Azara, where it's meant to be. And that's where the Ganav did the Shechita. It was Tamim, it was without blemish, it was a kosher behemoth. And in fact, this Ganav was a tzaddik. He had the owner in mind. I'm doing it for him. Perfect. Meaning he didn't deviate, he didn't divert it. Perfect carbon. So the carbon is perfectly fine, perfectly kosher. Even a zar, even a non-kayin can do the Shechita, right? So the Shechita will trigger the Alvehe. Asks the Gemara, well, that triggers another question. If in fact this carbon was shechted properly, so basically the carbon that the original owner designated was brought into fruition, it was actually realized, so the owner sort of got credited with this carbon, he got a check on his account, so basically the ganav returned the karen, the actual behemoth, to the owner. So what's the difference if you give it back physically, or you give it back conceptually? You gave it back to him. He got credited for the carbon. Although the Ganav attempted to do so, but ultimately mishap occurred and the blood of the carbon spilled, and it was never actually, you know, the avoidance, the process wasn't actually, you know, carried through to the end. So the carbon was never really kosher. The owner never got back his carbon. So it remains a geneva for which the ganav is responsible for. Kiyosu Ravn, Amar Yechanan. Ravn quoted Rabbi Yechanan that we're speaking b'sheche t'mimim b'fnim shulei l'shem bal. In order to answer both of these questions with one teretz, what happened to the shechita ru'uya? And what happened to chazru karen l'balam? So he says like this, achav. The ganav took the carbon, which was still kosher, and did the shechita in the azara, but he diverted it. He said, I'm not doing it for the owner. I'm doing it for myself. So in that case, Rashi brings the Mishnah in Zvachim. It's called Shalei Lishma. The carbon is kosher, so it's still considered Shechita Ru'uya. But it doesn't count for the owner. The owner doesn't get credit for this carbon. It's somewhat possible, it's somewhat efficient. He has to bring another one. So in effect, the Ganav never returned the animal to the owner. He never got it back. And therefore, he's still Chayiv Dalad Vehe. So according to Rabbi Eichnan, it was a Sheikhet carbon tamim in the Azar. That explains why it's a Shechita Ru'uya. However, we have another approach. Rish Lakish Amar. Why is it called Shechita Ru'uya, proper Shechita, which triggers Dalad Vehe? We're not speaking about a carbon inside. No. Rish Lakish Amar B'Sheikhet Balamum and B'Chutz. This carbon became a balmum, a blemished animal, in which case it's no longer fit for carbon. And the ganav shechted outside the azar, outside the Beis HaMikdash, as a regular animal. So it's called shechita ru'uya. It permits the basar for consumption, and therefore the ganav pays dal mehe. So we have two approaches. The shechita was on a tamim bifnim, or a balmum b'chutz. Toi bar ablasar. Toi means he smelled, he took a deep inhale, meaning he analyzed the two terutzim we just explained, and he challenged them. Toi barav lazer. The Rabbi Eichnan shechita materas, al izrika materas. What was Rabbi Eichnan's terutz? The shechita was a proper shechita because it was in the azara. But then what happened to the carbon? It became disqualified because the dam was spilled. So the zrik of the dam is really mat to the basar for consumption. We never got to that stage. How could you consider this a shechita ru'uya? By just doing the shechita properly. It needs phase two of the zrika. That's one question. Another question. The Reish Lakish, who says it was a shechita on the balmum b'chutz. The shechita is a proper shechita. Shechita materetz. Since when is the shechita allowing the carbon bamum to be eaten? Valoi pediyah materas. It's not the shechita that does the trick. You have to first redeem it. So if the shechita was done before it was redeemed from hegdish, so you can't eat this carbon. Says the Gemara Ishtamitze. So actually, Reb Lezer seemed to have sort of forgotten the following concept. We're going according to Reb Shimon, of course, that was the whole point. He was the one who says you need a proper shechita, an effective shechita, a shechita that accomplishes heter. Well, guess what? There's another point presented by Reb Shimon himself, which will shore up these problems. Ishtamitze hadar Reb Shimon. Hadar Amar Reb Shimon. Kala oimed li zarek ki zarek tam. It is considered a proper shechita in both cases, despite the fact that there was no zrika, the fact that there was no pidyon yet, because if the item is enabled for zrika, such as the case of the carbon which was nishchat properly, the dam was there about to be nizrak, we consider it as though it went through the zrika process because we have the material for the zrika, and therefore the shechita is called a proper shechita. Likewise, when it comes to redemption, we have the animal that can be redeemed right now. It's roi for pidyon. We view it as though it has that potential pidyon within it, and as though it was done, as though we've already arrived at that point. Meaning, in terms of the actual shechita, there's nothing missing. It's creating something that can have pidyon. You chose not to do pidyon. Okay, that doesn't matter. But there's nothing lacking. There's nothing deficient within the shechita if it enables for pidyon right away. Or in the case of the proper carbon, if it enables the zrika right away. And therefore it's called a proper zrika, a proper shechita, shechita ru'uya. Where do we find that Rav Shimon holds of that? Kalayim lizarek, lizarek is arav dami, something which is slated for zrika, we treat it as though it went through the zrika. The sanya, Rav Shimon Aymer. Yesh neisar shu metamitumas eichlam, yesh neisar sheinu metamitumas eichlam. So Rashi explains, according to Reb Shimon, the only time a food will have tumas oichan, will become tummy as food, is if it can be enjoyed, can be eaten, it can be benefited from. Either you can eat it yourself or feed it to a goy, but if it has no such function, then it's not considered food, it has no food value to it, and it's not going to be accepting tumas oichlan. So let's say we have a carbon whose flesh stayed overnight and became noiser, right? When something stays overnight, it becomes pasul. You can't eat it. You can't even have a no. Question, is that basar going to have the potential to become tummy tumas oichlan? Says Rav Shimon, it depends. It depends if it had potential for edibility. Rashi calls it a shahas akasher, a point in time where it could have. There was nothing stopping it from becoming okay. So even though presently it's no longer suitable, as long as it had that potential, so it was inherently it had inherent food value to it. It was capable of functioning as proper food. It sort of now accepts that, it accepted that label, and it becomes tumas oichlan, has the ability to become tummy as food. So in some cases noiser is metami tumas oichlan, in some cases not. So Shimon, yesh noiser shum metami tumas oichlan, yesh noiser sheinim tumas oichlan. Depends if it had that capability, it had that potential to be mutar. Ketzad lon lifnei zrika einu metame tumas oichlan. Let's say the lina took place before the zrika of the dam. Right? So the zrika is really what allows us to eat the basar. It never happened. There was no zrika, so it never got to first base and never had potential to be eaten, to be consumed. And then it went through the lina process and became pasul. So it was a non-starter. Einu metame tumas oichlan. But lachas zrika. But if the noiser happened post zrika, metame tumas oichlan, because there was a moment in time when it was considered oichl after zrika, it could have been eaten. And here comes the punchline: even if in actuality it never had that permissibility, it never had the heter achila, but if it had it in potential, v'kaimelon. Listen to this, v'kaimelon. And we learned that when the Mishnah, when Rav Shimon says, before Zrika, after Zrika, it means like this. My lifnei Zrika, kodim shenira l'Zrika. If the lina, the noiser, happened before the dam was available for Zrika, meaning there was no time for us to do Zrika during daytime, you know, before the day was up, in which case the zman of the avoid expires. So if it happened at that point, there was no potential. And therefore, it's not metame tumas oichlan. But la'achas zrika means, doesn't mean actually after zrika was performed. La'achas shenira l'zrika. As long as there was some sort of potential, capability to do the zrika. The Gemara explains, koydim shenira l'zrika lon mayi. What does that mean? It overnighted before it was ro'i for zrika. De'lo'yhavya shehus b'yim l'mizrike. There wasn't enough time during the day to do the zrika, the shachli yishom, samach shkia sachama. They did the shkita on the carbon a minute before shkia. Once shkia hits, that's the end of the day bell in the Beis HaMikdash. You can no longer do the avoida. So since there was no potential for zrika that day, and then the basar just stayed overnight and became pasul, it never tapped into its food identity. It never had the capability. It wasn't right for achila. Veinam tamat v'as oichlan doesn't have the tumah. When Rav Shimon says la'acha shenira l'zrika lon, that the lina took place after it was roif for zrika, the hav yeshuhus b'yam l'mizrake. It was 10 minutes to shkia. If they would have hurried up, they could have gotten the dam off and onto the mizbeach. Metamat v'as oichlan. That is enough to trigger the oichl label. To attach the oichlan label onto this food, onto the basar. What do you mean? Why? If, you know, you would tell me, okay, after zrika, the basar is now matama tumasa. I understand, it's already roi lachi. But because there was enough time to do the zrika, why is that enough? Alma, clearly Rav Shimon subscribes to this concept of potential. Once you're there, even though you didn't actually actualize it, but you could do it, you have all the tools, everything's right there, that's enough. the material is available, that means you've arrived to a certain extent. Alma kalo emer lizrek zarek dami. Clearly, when something is emer lizrek, it's about to do zrika, about to undergo zrika. We treat it as though you have arrived at that point, with respect to, you know, triggering all these processes and affecting, you know, the other items involved. So back to our story. You did the shechita on the carbon bifnim, even though you didn't get to do the zrika properly. We said that, you know, dam was nishpach, it spilled. He never got to the zrika. It doesn't matter. As far as the shechita is concerned, he brought it to the next level. He brought it to where he needed to bring it. So it's a proper shechita. There was nothing lacking in the shechita. He brought it to the threshold of zrika. And we learn this from the halacha of Tumas Eichlin, who Reb Shimon clearly subscribes to this halacha. Bringing it to the threshold is enough. And likewise, v'chalayim b'lifta is kipati domi. This relates to Rish Lakish's explanation. It was a balnom. The shechita took place outside the Azorah. And despite the fact that there was no pidyon yet, and Rashi explains before, you can't even do pidyon anymore. Sorry. Even though there was no pidyon yet, at the point of shechita, it doesn't matter because it's emid lepadais, it's slated for pidyon, so the shechita generated something which is potentially okay and useful and available for consumption, and therefore it's called the shechita ruya. Where do we find this idea? In the name of Rav Shimon, the son of Rav Shimon. So, speaking about a paraduma, which, you know, once it gets advanced in its process, you know, you do the shechita and the azor and all that, that's it, you can't have it anymore. It's not edible. According to Rav Shimon, it is metama tumas echlin. It is susceptible to tuma that's unique to food. Why? Because there was one point in time, even after the shechita was done, where theoretically it could have been eaten. What do you mean? It's a paradum? It could have. Why? Why? V'amar Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish came and explained this halacha. I'm Mahayir Rav Shimon. Because Rav Shimon himself told us a halacha that you could be paid, you can redeem it if you find a better one. Parah niftis agave marachsa. Maracha was the wood arrangement, the firewood arrangement upon which they did the shechita and then they burnt it, right? So, even after they did the shechita in the right place, it's about to be burnt, you can still quickly redeem it if you find a nicer or a better one. Parah niftis agave marachsa. So it has that it carries that potential all along. Alma kala ema dutas kipati domi. So apparently potential counts. Capability has value. And since you could have employed it and used it for your own personal use, it is considered eichel. And it's metama tumas eichel. Same thing with the case of the Baal Mum, which according to Rish Lakish is the case of Reb Shimon here. Even though he didn't actually do pidyon, but he could have done pidyon, so the shechita enabled it, and it's called a shechita ruya. So bottom line is, why is the Gan of Chaya for Tvicha on Hegdish? Yechana says it was a carbon tamim bifnim. Rish Lakish says a carbon balmum b'chutz. Now we'll try to explain why each one chose his route as opposed to his colleagues. I can fully understand Rabbi Yechon didn't hold like Rabbi Shimon and Lakish. The Kabbalah of Masnis and Mafilu B'tmimin, because he preferred learning the Mishnah speaking about even a regular Hagdish, Tamim, not a Bamo. That's your typical carbon. El Rish Lakish. My time. Why did Rish Lakish choose his approach? That it's a Baal Mum, as opposed to Rabbi Yechon. Amar Lach, Rish Lakish responds. You cannot say that the Mishnah is speaking about a regular Kachim Tamimim. Utvacha, Amar Lach, Utvacha, Yimachari, Pasik, describes the Ganav as either doing Tvicha or Mechira. We connect them. We align them. Kaleichad Isa b'Mechira, Isa b'Tvicha. Apparently, you can't have one without the other. A situation which allows for dalat vehe to be triggered by selling the animal will also allow it to be triggered by shechting the animal. But if you have a situation where you're limited, there's no potential for mechira, such as a carbon, right? Likewise, even if the ganav shechts it, there's no chiyuv of dalve. It has to go, it's a package deal, all or nothing. V'hani kachim, and these karbanos, since if he sells them, there's no dalve, hey? Less number tvicha. Likewise, there is no potential for tvicha. You can't have one without the other. V'azel tamayu, and clearly Rabbi Yechanan disagrees, even though you can't be chayef for mechira, but you can be chayef for tvicha. So Rabbi Yechanan and Shlokesh are aligned with a different dispute they had elsewhere, which sort of lines up with this discussion, whether you can have one without the other. The Yitma we have learned, Tamecha Treifa, Li Reb Shimon. So we all know that according to Reb Shimon, in order to be Chayiv Dal Veifa Tvicha, it has to be a Shchita Ruya, as opposed to a Shchita on a Treifa, an animal with an internal wound, where the Shchita does not enable it for Achigla, so there's no Dal Veifa for the Shchita. What about if he's Meicharit? He doesn't do Tvicha, he does Mechira. Rabbi Yechon Amar Chayiv, okay, you can't do Tvicha, but you can do Mechira. Rish Lakash Amar Potter. Why? Rabbi Yechon Amar Chayiv, Avgad Glesa B'Tvicha, he said Mechira, even though you can't have Tvicha on it, but you can have Mechira. Rish Lakash Amar Potter. You can't have one without the other. Given the lesson with Tvicha, lesson with Mechira, if you can't have Tvicha, you can't have Mechira. Ain't Sri Rabbi Yechon. Rabbi Yechon who said you can have one without the other, asked a Kasha on Rish Lakash, who says it's a package. Ain't Sri Rabbi Yechon and Rishim and Lakash. Bryce says, Ganav Kilayim Utvacha. For Ganav steals Kilayim, Rashi says, an animal born via a crossbreed between a Kivsa and a Taish. Okay, between a sheep and a goat. Okay? Utvacha nishachted it. Or he stole a Treifa, an animal with an internal wound, Umachar, and he sold it. Mishalim Tashnum Abar V'chamisha. So he pays up. Pays in full. My love, Reb Shimoni. Let's assume it's Reb Shimon. Right? The very fact that the Brisa cited Mechira by Treifa, not Tvicha, apparently it's Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon, he says that Tvicha doesn't apply to a Treifa because it's not a Shechita, not a proper Shechita, which enables it for consumption. But Mechira does apply. Alma, you see, is not connected. Alma Avgad Lesser B'Tvicha is Mechira, even though you can't have Mechira, Tvicha, you can have Mechira. Alma Le Reb Yechanan responds, Loi, Rabboni, I'm going like Reb Shimon. Who says there's no shechita by treifa? Going back to Rabbanon, who hold that even a shechita which is not matter the basar is still considered tvicha. So there's nothing lacking. Even a treifa has double potential. You can do tvicha, you can do mechira. Asks the Gemara, okay, so you're Rabbanon, but if we're going back to Rabbanon, why does the Brisa specify mechira treifa but mechira isa bezvicha lesa? A treifa can have either tvicha or mechira. So why does the Braisa specify that he sold the treifa? But tvicha less, so you can't do shechita. You could do shechita on it. So why does the Braisa pick only one? Elamai Reb Shimon. Okay, so what are you? You're insisting that's an indication that the Braisa is Reb Shimon, and that explains why it only mentions mechira by treifa. But what about the other case, the kalayim? Kalayim but tvicha is mechira lesser. The Braisa says he did shechita on the kalayim. Only shechita is applicable to kalayim. You can't sell it and be chayav dal behe. There's no restriction in terms of kalayim, what you do with it. Ela tana tvicha v'odin l'mechira. So apparently, you know, the Braisa just cited one example of two. By kalayim, it decided to pick tvicha, but really, it would be just as relevant to mechira. So, eimah l'rabbananami. So even if the Braisa reflects shechita's rabbanon, why did the Braisa pick? You know, by treifa, did it pick mechira? He picked one of the two. Emel arbona nami, tana mechira, vodin l'tvicha. By treifa, it picked mechira as an example, really. It's just as well applicable by tvicha. So again, it's rabbona, not Reb Shimon. Has no relevance to our discussion. Rabbi Yechon responds, no. Hi, Mai, you can't say that. Yamas mishlemin Reb Shimon. You know, if in fact the Braisa is Reb Shimon, in which case, the treifa can only have the tvicha potential, the mechira potential, because the tvicha is a shechita shein ruya. So that would explain why the Braisa only cited one of two, Bishleimer Rav Shimon, I did tana treifa b'chada. Since by treifa we're limited to one case, which is the mechira, because tficha doesn't apply to treifa. According to Rav Shimon, it's not a shechita ruya. So since we picked only one example by treifa, so for you know symmetrical purposes, the brisa did the same by the kelaim. Tana kelaim b'chada. We only mentioned one offense, one potential offense by the kelaim, which is the mechira. So it's sort of symmetrical. Eli Amr's Rabbanon, but according to you, it's Rabbanon speaking. Why pick and choose, you know, Narvinu Nisninu, just put both cases together and say like this. Ganav Kalayim Treif, he stole either Kalayim or Treif, and he did whatever he wanted. Tavchan or Machar, either he did Tvich or the Mechir on both. Misham Tashlom Rav HaMisha. Right, if it's Rabbanon, just say it like that, Kasha, you're right. We leave it unresolved. Tomorrow now we'll discuss why at all you chayef for Kalayim. We'll see that by the Hashem tomorrow. So bottom line is like this. The Ganav took the animal, made it hegdish, and then the tvicha mechira. We know for the tvicha yipata, because it's a hegdish animal, there's no tvicha there. Right? Whereas the actual hegdish, why isn't it considered a mechira? More answer, because it's not really a full change of hands, it still identifies with the owner. Now, in the next piece of the Gemara, we were going on the case where the original owner made it hegdish, and the ganav stole it and did the tvicha mechira. So we did the tvicha actually. So Pshima says, well, if it's something that he's responsible for, the former owner Chai Bachar Yusan, considered partially his, and your chayiv for these things. The question was, what about the shechita? It's a shechita shein eruya. So we have two terutzim. Either we're speaking that he did the carbon kachem b'fnim, or according to Rish Lakish, b'amun b'chutz. Rish Lakish preferred his approach because you're not chayef for the shechita kachem b'chutz, since there's no possibility of mechira. You can't do mechira, you can't do tvicha. On which Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. He says you can have one without the other. Rabbi Yochanan picked his example as opposed to the case of the Balmum because he wanted to learn that the Mishnah speaking even by regular carbon, which is a carbon, which is a tamim. And we got into we started discussing Kalayim, which will continue by the Hashem tomorrow. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rabbah.